I'm not God here to forgive you or not forgive you. I understand. I get it. You're afraid, probably. You don't know what to say. You don't know how to say it. But just say it. Come forward, please. It's got to be on your mind. You're afraid. I get it. I've been afraid for 10 years. I'm afraid to get up some days. I don't want to get up, but I do it because of we have to be bound together. We have to help each other out.
Welcome to Love and Justice. I'm Kyle Olson. On October 6, 2009, an intruder broke into the Love family home, walked upstairs to Ashley's bedroom, and shot 19-year-old Ashley Love in the face with a shotgun. To date, the killer has not been caught. No suspects are in custody, and the case has been registered as an official cold case with the Milwaukee Police Department since 2014. On today's episode, we're going to explore more details about what happened on that terrible night. This is Love and Justice. In our last episode, we talked with Tammy Love, Ashley's mother, as well as Teresa Brockman, Ashley's grandma. Both of them shared thoughts about how they wished that somebody could help dive deeper into this cold case.
If I had enough money, I would have gotten a private investigator a long time, but I don't have that kind of money.
I know Ashley's case is not the Milwaukee Police Department's only case, but she's my only case. She's mine. Every day, you know, you listen on the radio, you turn on the news, and the numbers, the resources of the Milwaukee Police Department are going down. They've got no funding. They're cutting this. They're cutting that. And it just leads me to think, the Milwaukee Police Department, they can't do this. They can't solve this murder on their own. I can't do it on my own. We need to come together and all do it together. And there's nothing wrong with asking for help from people, from each other.
One of my good friends in Los Angeles is a woman by the name of Noelle. Noelle and I have worked on many film and TV sets together. For years, she has been a rock star casting director, casting some of the biggest names in reality TV. She has cast roles for many different types of shows, including criminal justice shows, where Hollywood producers hire real investigators to come in and take a crack at cold cases. Noelle has an incredible Rolodex of the best and brightest current and former law enforcement officers out there, from the local level all the way to the federal level. Noelle recently reached out to me because she thought of somebody who could help us out and give us the advice and expertise that we have been looking for. Hello, Noelle.
Hi, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad you called. What's going on?
Okay. I cannot stop thinking about our podcast. I can't stop thinking about Ashley and the case. And today it hit me. We need an expert. We need a detective.
I could not agree more. I think this has been literally one of my biggest dreams since the very start. When we first started talking about this, this is something that like has gone on the vision board of we need somebody that can come in, that has the experience, that has the years, and that knows how to handle a cold case. But I think my sticking point is just finding somebody with that experience that's willing to help us, that has the time. So unless you know somebody who's got the time and the experience, I don't know where to go.
Kyle, I agree. We knew this was never going to be easy, but lucky for us, I know just the guy. I know the guy who has over 40 years of law enforcement experience with homicides, cold cases. He's worked a bajillion cases, and I'm pretty sure he's willing to do this pro bono.
Really? That's incredible. Wait. You can't just leave me hanging here. You have to tell me more.
So his name is Special Agent Sean Smith, and he is someone that I interviewed years ago while I was casting some true crime shows. You know, casting true crime is just like when you're casting something like Top Chef. Like, you're not just looking for the personality. Like, they need to be an amazing chef first. They need to be an amazing detective first. Then you look for the personality. He has this amazing fire in the belly. Like, he's a straight shooter. And just when he talks, you can tell that he means what he says. And so instantly I was taken by him. He's the best of the best when it comes to law enforcement. Special Agent Sean Smith actually oversaw for the Attorney General of Alabama all of the cold cases in the state.
Wow.
He has solved over 350 murders.
Holy cow.
He's an all-star. He's an all-star. Like, he's just the best of the best. And he's obviously always busy.
Right. Sean sounds absolutely incredible. And it sounds like he is the type of person that has exactly the type of experience that we need. I guess my million-dollar question now is he available? Because these people are surely busy all the time.
Well, guess who sent me a Facebook message yesterday that said, I retired from law enforcement if you hear of anything.
Really?
Yes. And I took it upon myself to let him know a little bit about what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
And to let him know that, you know, this is grassroots. We need an expert. We need your expertise, sir. And it turns out, you know, he's working at Bass Pro Shop. Like, this is in his blood. Like, he's looking for a case. And so I just think, you know, timing is everything. And it's really our lucky day.
Wow.
He's ready to get on a call with us, like, tonight.
Oh my gosh. Well, say no more. I know what I'm doing now. I think I need to clear my calendar for the evening because it sounds like we need to get on the phone with this guy right away. This is absolutely incredible. This is exactly what we need as we're getting this podcast started. I have no words.
I cannot wait for you to talk to him. Just wait. Oh, like, seriously. I mean, the man is a legend. He is a legend. And just everything about him gives you this confidence that we will get answers. With him on our side, we'll get answers for Ashley.
I have goosebumps. I don't know what else to say. This is amazing. Noelle, thank you so much. This is absolutely incredible. And onward and upward we go.
Onward.
Having someone with this type of experience who's willing to listen to us and talk about our quest for justice is truly a stroke of luck. Sean Smith already sounds incredible, and I haven't even met him yet. I have so many questions, and I cannot wait to pick his brain. Hello, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, Kyle?
Hey, it's good to hear you. I'm so happy and grateful that I'm able to spend some time with you today and chat. We have a lot to talk about here, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I'm looking forward to discussing this case with you, Kyle.
I'd like to start with a bit of a general question just to kind of get things kicked off here. Why is justice in a case like this so important?
Because Ashley Love deserves justice. The reality is that you're dealing with a human being. You're dealing with somebody's loved one. I don't care if you are a politician, a doctor, or a street prostitute. Somebody loves you. Somebody out there loves you, okay? Nobody deserves to be murdered in the way that we see people get murdered. I will put just as much effort towards that prostitute that was murdered as I would towards that doctor that got murdered. Because they have family. They have loved ones. Nobody deserves to be murdered the way that we see things happen out here. Nobody. I deal with a lot of victims and victims' families from crimes from many years ago. And they are still affected every single day by these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Having hope that at some point in time that the case will be resolved is extremely important. On the other hand, you cannot let it dictate your life. You can't let it control everything about you. I can assure you that your loved one would want you to go on living. You can't be consumed and die from living because of what's already happened. We can't bring that loved one back. What we can do is find answers. Now, I don't subscribe to the word closure. The fact is that we can resolve cases. We can solve cases with with a lot of work, with a lot of teamwork, with a lot of people coming forward that know things, that have been afraid to talk for whatever reason, have been hesitant to talk. They can come forward. We can resolve these cases.
Yeah.
But you never, as a family member, and we'll use Tammy as an example.
Sure.
She will never truly find closure. You can't heal that wound, that empty place in her heart where she's lost a daughter. Mm-hmm. We can certainly give her answers. I just don't believe that closure is the right word for that.
I think a lot of times people see finding justice and making sure justice is served, that equals closure. And that you're saying that's not the case. You're saying justice is one thing, closure is a completely different thing.
Yes, her family deserves answers. They need to see justice take place. Just because a case doesn't get resolved immediately doesn't mean in any way that it doesn't need to be resolved. Certainly, they get more and more difficult as time goes on. But yeah, they need to be resolved.
I couldn't agree more. I think in addition to these reasons you mentioned, another thing that comes to my mind is, what happens if the offender goes off and commits other crimes?
The majority of people that commit murder, it's a one and done type thing. They don't go on killing over and over and over.
That's interesting. And why is that?
Spur of the moment type murders, heat of passion type murders. There can be a number of reasons why somebody commits a murder. That doesn't mean that they're going to keep killing people over and over and over. Obviously, when you're talking about a serial offender, you're talking about people that have completely different personalities. They have mental issues, in my opinion.
So how do you approach a new case?
First and foremost, never give up. Never give up. And never let this case consume you to where it destroys you. You simply cannot take one approach to every case. Every case is different. Every case is different. Every case has its own characteristics. Every case requires that you take a unique approach to that case. If you go into every case the same way, I think that's when you begin to see failures.
Are these failures part of the reason that a case can become cold?
Most homicide units are not fully staffed. For a lot of agencies, it's hard to go back and pick up those cases that were not resolved in the beginning because you've got other stuff coming in. And it's just impossible for today's homicide investigator to keep up.
Impossible to keep up. That is an understatement. And most police departments today struggle from a lack of proper funding.
A college professor told me one time, and he kind of summed it up in kind of an interesting thing here. He said, law enforcement is considered evil, but a necessary evil. Okay. Law enforcement today, and it's worse than I've seen it, you know, it has developed over the last 10, 12 years is when I saw it get really bad, is that we're demonized. When you go into law enforcement, you need to want to go into law enforcement for a specific reason. I got into this business because I genuinely like to help people. I love people. I love people. But when you take any individual and you pin a badge on their chest and you put a gun on their side, there, sir, is a tremendous amount of power. You have a tremendous amount of power right there. That is a lot of responsibility to take on.
There has been a national discussion in America lately regarding issues related to racial justice. Following the unfortunate incident involving George Floyd in Minneapolis, many people took to the streets to protest and demand justice. However, alongside the Black Lives Matter movement, there were also some who expressed their belief that police officers are unnecessary or corrupt, leading to calls for defunding the police. It's important to note that the purpose of this podcast is not to take a political stance. We're not here to tell you what to think or believe. Nonetheless, we'd like to share Tammy's perspective on the matter.
Do I think Black Lives Matter? Of course. But do I think the police should be defunded? No.
There is no denying that there are some police officers who engage in misconduct, and they should be held accountable for their actions. However, there are also many good police officers who do not receive the media attention they deserve. These officers, like Sean, make a positive impact in people's lives, including Tammy's. Tammy needs these good cops to help her seek justice for her daughter. The reality is that cutting police budgets can make it more difficult for people like Tammy to ever see justice. Our police departments need support. Balancing the support with other community needs, like in Milwaukee, can be challenging.
The money for law enforcement is not there, and I don't think it's ever going to be there. I think there are too many other priorities out there. You know, it's hard to structure everything that you do around a cold case unit. It's just not going to happen. What I do believe is that there needs to be groups of people that are willing to look at cold cases. I prefer former law enforcement officers, former investigators, people with experience in working these cases, to where when a homicide case goes cold, that at some point another group of people are permitted to look at it. A group of people that are cold case investigators are able to look at it. Not necessarily with that agency. You may have people that were with that agency, but generally, I think if you take these cold cases and give them to somebody, another group of experts, let them look at it. Don't get your feelings hurt because somebody else is going to look at it. A lot of people get offended if you say, hey, let me look at your case and see what you're missing. I'm not missing anything. Obviously, you are. No offense, but obviously you are. I've missed things in my career, Kyle. I've missed some things. I've had people come back to me and say, did you look at this? God, dog, I missed it. Because how does the saying go? You can't see the trees for the forest.
Do you think sometimes that ego gets in the way of people trying to solve cases?
Well, let me back up here. Homicide detectives have a tendency to be kind of arrogant, egotistical jackasses. Okay? Because we're good at what we do. Okay? We're damn good at what we do. Sure. Not everybody can do what we do. It's more difficult than people realize. Okay, some people just aren't built for that. I don't want to be critical of Milwaukee, and I'm not going to be political of Milwaukee PD. They've missed something, okay? Generally, you miss something, and that's why that case is unresolved. If I'm missing something, I find me somebody else in the unit and say, hey, please, look over this case. I'll sit down with you and go over it, or you go over it by yourself and tell me what I'm missing. There's nothing wrong with that.
I feel like this is something that is fairly common in many industries. At some point, you need to give your eyes a break and get some fresh eyes on a project to see more clearly. This strategy seems like a good way to get cold cases to improve their clearance rates. So why wouldn't the Milwaukee Police Department want to lean into this approach?
because they don't want to get embarrassed by anything. I'm not interested in making anybody look bad. If we were to develop information or strategy or anything on this case that would help resolve this case, then you then have to turn it right back over to Milwaukee Police Department anyhow. They're the ones that are going to have to go forward to get the process started because it's their jurisdiction.
Right. The goal here is simple. You said it best. We don't want to make anybody look bad. The goal is merely to find justice. And frankly, if we're putting our cards on the table, the goal is to help out a department that is clearly underwater and is unable to dedicate the time and appropriate resources to solving a case that's been cold for so long.
Strangely enough, sometimes is the problem is, well, who's going to get credit for it? Well, Milwaukee PD would get credit for this. All the way, Milwaukee PD would get credit for this. I don't care who gets credit for it. They could never bring my name up and I'd be happy as long as it resolved the case.
So, Sean, now that we've had a chance to talk and understand a bit of the behind-the-scenes process, I'd like to bring in Tammy and introduce the two of you so we can actually dive into the case. All right, let's bring Tammy on the line now, shall we? Hello, Tammy.
Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Sean. It's nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you, ma'am.
I know Tammy has been very excited to meet you, Sean.
It fills me up like with hope. I just feel Ashley. I just feel her. Like, I can't even explain it.
There are hundreds of cases out here I'd love to look at. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of cases I would like to resolve. It's just in my nature to help. It's just in my nature to help. These are the things that I love to do, and I'll do them as long as the good Lord lets me continue to do them.
Thank you. I tell you right now from the bottom of my heart, for everybody, thank you for all you do. It's so appreciated.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm in awe that somebody would want to do that. It just shows me there are good people still. With all the bad, they're good. And I thank you just isn't enough to say. Seriously, it's not.
Let me say this, okay? I am a spiritual person, God-fearing Christian. Okay. God gave me a talent. I'm not good at much, but I'm generally pretty good at this. I've never been the guy behind the badge that likes rappelling down from the side of a building upside down and shooting guns and all that stuff. I'm just more interested in helping families. I have seen enough tragedy in my life. I've seen enough pain in my life. A lot of people ask me why I don't just walk away from it. I can't. I can't do it.
Sean, you really are one in a million. To kick things off, I'd like to start by talking about that night. I think it's an important step for Sean to help start piecing together what happened. This is an important time to note that it is very difficult for the Love family to talk about that night.
Just like right now, I'm trying to... my head's telling me, Tammy, stay on the good memories, but it's being... I can just feel it being pulled to what I saw that night. You know, I just feel it. I just... Right now, I'm fighting it. I'm like, literally... I'm fighting to close it off.
As a standing rule, I typically don't ask them much about this night on the record. They have had off-the-record conversations about that night with Sean and others, and I'm going to recap their general recollection of the events as they happened. When possible, I will use clips from the family so that you aren't just hearing from me. October 5th, 2009. The day began like any other day for the Love family. It was a Monday, so the Loves were starting off the week like they usually do. Tammy and Joe were at the Arby's on Capitol Drive for a morning shift. Anthony was attending college classes at MSOE, the Milwaukee School of Engineering. Alex, who was 11 years old, was in school. And Ashley, now 19, reported to Mayfair Mall's Arby's for that afternoon to handle a late shift. Her manager, Brighton, was one of the last people to ever see Ashley. He recalls the moments before she left work that evening.
Mayfair Mall Arby's was where I first met Ashley in person. Ashley's passion when it came to Arby's was something deep as a family versus being a place to work. I replay the night often. I was the last person other than her family to be around her that night as we closed the night before. It was later at night. We were sitting there and we were knocking dishes out. And there's an interesting thing, that a problem that we had with the sink back there, where one of the sinks would just never declog because of all the grease and stuff like that. And we constantly had to have people come in and clear out the grease trap. It was just me and her, and we were rushing to like get out of there. And she left the sink on. And I go in the back there, and there's just water coming out of the top of the sink all over the floor. So we were there for like an extra like 20 to 30 minutes having to mop the floor.
Jessica Burrows, one of Ashley's best friends, was also working at Arby's that night. She remembers her last encounter with Ashley, too.
We both were at work. We both closed, so we left Mayfair Mall probably about 10 o'clock-ish. I told her I would see her tomorrow or later. She had gotten a car with Tammy. I had gone to my car. And I drove home. I believe I did text Ashley that night. I can't really remember, but there was a good possibility I did. She didn't seem on edge or like she was scared about something or worried about something. Mm-hmm. She just seemed like her normal self. Like she worked hard and fast, and it's just how the day went. It was just like a normal day.
I remember the last night that I saw Ashley. I picked her up from work, and we were driving home from work, and we were in the car. It's kind of cute because she had long hair. She loved her long hair. And she's like, oh, I just smell like roast beef. She's like, I just got to take a shower when I get home. So I grabbed some of her hair. I smelled it. I said, oh, you sure do. I said, it does smell like roast beef. Ooh. I remember giggling together as we're driving home. And then we get home and we talked about the next day because we had to get up early because she was going to go and work. She had to work a double shift. So she showered, and I remember being on the computer and talking about, of course, Arby's like we always do. And then she went to bed.
Tammy drove Ashley home from work at Arby's. And that evening, Ashley and her family watched a Green Bay Packer football game in the living room while eating. It was a playoff game, and the Packers were playing against their biggest rival, the Minnesota Vikings. Love family was zoned in because Brett Favre was playing for the Vikings for the very first time. Packers lost the game by a score of 30-23. And the Loves, like most fans throughout the state of Wisconsin, were crushed. After the game, Ashley took a shower, said goodnight to her parents, and went to bed in her second floor bedroom. While Ashley's room had a window, the only real way in was through a set of stairs through a door on the ground floor. A door that never locked. Ashley's parents, Tammy and Joe, went to bed shortly before midnight. Tammy and Joe had a bedroom on the ground floor of the house, just across the hallway from Alex, the youngest member of the family, who had been put to bed hours earlier. Anthony, Ashley's older brother, went to bed around midnight in his bedroom, which was located in the basement of the house. At approximately 2 a.m., an armed intruder, or intruders, broke into the Love's residence from the side door of the house near the garage. The side door leads into a kitchen, which connects to the hallway that leads to a stairwell. Based on the evidence found at the scene, it's believed that a crowbar was used to break the lock and gain entry into the house. To the best of our knowledge, the intruder or intruders immediately made their way to the second floor of the Love house, which is where Ashley's bedroom was located. Once the intruder or intruders made their way into Ashley's attic bedroom, they shot her point blank in the face with a shotgun while she lay in her bed. After the shot was fired, Tammy recalls being jolted out of her sleep, but she didn't know what had woken her. Tammy alleges that she heard footsteps from outside the door as if somebody was running down the stairs from Ashley's room. Tammy got out of bed to investigate the noise, and when she opened her bedroom door, a masked intruder was standing in front of her with a shotgun in hand. Scared for her life, Tammy immediately thought that the family was being robbed. She started to scream and told the masked intruder, "Take whatever you want, just please don't hurt us." The intruder paused for only a few moments before running out the side door of the house, the same door that was used to gain entry into the house. Still in shock, Tammy screamed for her husband, Joe, who was still in bed. Tammy told Joe to go upstairs and check on Ashley. When Joe entered Ashley's bedroom, Joe discovered Ashley lifeless in her bed.
I remember you up there screaming, like, who would do this? Who would do that? I
oh, yeah. When I went up to look, yeah.
Because I remember yelling, they took her. They took Ashley. I think they took Ashley.
I went up and I could smell the gunpowder, whatever. You could smell it. And then I just went up and it was still kind of dark. So I'm like leaning over her body and I was like, oh, my God. It's like, who could do something like this?
I remember, yeah.
And that was
it. It was just like, go on.
Tammy dialed 911 and handed the phone to Joe so that he could talk to the police. Tammy was speechless. While all of this was happening, Anthony, who was in the basement sleeping, awoke to chaos in the house. He came upstairs to join the family, and within minutes, the Milwaukee Police Department arrived on scene. The Love family struggles to remember some details of this gruesome evening because much of the night was a blur. There are, however, a few vivid details that stand out to everyone from that tragic evening.
I was in the bedroom with the boys because they were taking the body out, and Tammy was outside with the police talking to them. They separated us all into separate rooms. Alex, 11 years old, in the one room, because they're obviously questioning us all separately. But then after they had questioned us all, I was like, well, can't Alex come in here? He's only 11. So they let him come and sit by me in the house. Basically, we sat in the living room, me and him. Anthony's in a separate room by himself. And then that's when they said, oh, we're going to bring the body down. And so they moved me and Alex into the room that Anthony was in, shut the door. And I just broke down and, you know, crying in front of Alex and Anthony. Find myself saying, oh, I'm sorry, you know. Just basically broke down right in front of them. I just remember needing to tell my family and couldn't even say it. Beth's like, what's going on? What's going on? And I'm like, you know, I couldn't say it.
The police found no discrepancies in any of the Love's family stories or timelines as to when the murder happened and when 911 phone calls were made. The Love family, which includes Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex, went through intense, thorough investigations and were completely cleared by the Milwaukee Police Department. Tammy firmly believes that the intruder she saw leaving the house had an accomplice. She vaguely recalls looking out of a window and seeing somebody else running. It is possible that when the intruder, or intruder and accomplice, left the Love house, they went through the backyard, which ultimately led to a creek. The creek ran behind the houses on 64th Street and led to a footbridge where pedestrians could cross and meet at the street. To date, investigators have not ruled out the possibility of an accomplice. It should also be noted that there were rumors in the neighborhood on the night that this happened that the Milwaukee Police Department brought dogs down to the creek in an attempt to follow the scent. MPD has not confirmed or denied this detail of the investigation. On the night of the murder, nothing was taken from the Love household, which leads investigators to quickly discount burglary as a motive. Though the intruder wore a bandana that concealed the lower half of his face, Tammy described him as a Hispanic male, approximately 20 years of age, with an average height and build. The intruder had short, spiked black hair and wore a dark, zippered sweater or jacket. So, Sean, as you hear all the details about this case and you look at the limited amount of facts that are available, What goes through your mind?
The interesting part to me, the part that kind of stands out, is somebody targeted Ashley. She was not a random victim. Somebody came in that house looking for her. And apparently they knew right where she was at. So that tells me that somebody knows her. Somebody knew who they were going after. If I remember right, this is a two-story house. Is that right, Kyle?
That's correct. It's a two-story house with a basement. Ashley lived on the top floor of a refurbished attic of sorts. And Tammy and Joe, the parents, had a bedroom on the main ground floor along with Alex, the youngest son. And then there was Anthony, who was the oldest son, who was living in the basement of the house.
Well, and see, this is my thing. Somebody knew exactly where she was at. Why didn't they go downstairs to the brother? You'd have to understand the layout, certainly.
I agree with you. I agree 100%. There were only two doors that you could use to get into the Love House. Both were on the ground level, and one of them, if I recall, had a couch in front of it. The door that the intruder or killer used to get in was on the side of the house. So if you're the intruder and you opened up that door looking for a random room to enter, the last place that you would end up is in Ashley's room, just because of how the house was designed.
So somebody knew right where she was at. The big question here is going to have a lot to do with what we can find out about Ashley and her background and who she knew. Who did she cross? What happened here? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of questions that I have. Somebody knew the layout. Somebody knew exactly where Ashley Love slept, where she was at when they came in that house.
I also believe that another reason that this case wasn't random is because of how Ashley was killed. It's brutal to say it out loud, but she was killed ultimately by a gunshot to the face from a shotgun. To me, that doesn't feel random.
That's very personal. Very personal. The fact that she shot in the face is significant to me. That's a personal thing there.
I agree. Now, talk to me a little bit about the evidence. You know, we live in this day and age where we want to watch these shows like CSI that make the process of investigating a crime scene seem so much more glamorous than I imagine it really is. I think a lot of people, when they first heard about this case, said, well, surely somebody got fingerprints or some other sort of evidence, right? Yet here we are, we still have no strong leads. And I don't know what evidence the Milwaukee Police Department collected. I imagine they collected something. But is it possible that the evidence they did collect was just unhelpful or, plainly put, bad evidence?
I believe in this day and age, every case is going to have something. If you watch enough TV, and all the bad guys I know watch TV, okay? They all watch these TV shows, and they see what law enforcement does. They see where all they find evidence. They see every bit of it. As a result of that, a lot of times, they think about that if they're going to commit a crime. They know where they might leave evidence at. In this case here, there are a lot of things that, Kyle, simply I don't know, okay? The phone,
right.
The computer. Was there or is there the potential for DNA? Okay, 9 years ago, technology for developing profiles off DNA was different than it is today. This is one of the things that I used to teach, and I still teach, investigators. The question that you have to ask yourself is this. Tell me what technology is 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road. When I started working cold cases for the state, that's what I would do. I would go in and look at all the original evidence, every bit of it. There may be 75% of that evidence that may not mean anything to me. What I would do is go through that evidence piece by piece by piece. I would parse out that evidence. I would break it down. Right. And a lot of this evidence had already been submitted for forensic analysis back years ago. So let's resubmit it, but not all of it. You don't need to resubmit all of it. You have to remember that everything that you submit for forensic analysis, for instance, is going to be examined. I only want to resubmit what I think will produce probative evidence. The technology has changed. And if I submitted something and they still couldn't tell me anything, what would I tell that agency from which that evidence came from? Keep it, because you don't know what's coming 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road. Technology's getting better and better and better. Hold on to that evidence.
As I listen to you say this, I can't help but think, gosh, they should be able to run that evidence again. If they haven't run that evidence since 2009, they should go back and get that stuff in the lab, right? How do you go about doing that? How do people like me and you that are kind of on the outside looking in get that done?
Well, here's the thing, Kyle. We don't truly know what they have at this point, right?
Well, here's where I'd like to bring in Tammy and get it straight from the source. Tammy, what do you know about the evidence that was taken after this happened? What evidence have you received back since Ashley was taken?
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Nothing? Not one thing?
Correct. I have nothing. Nope.
Wow.
Joe and I are afraid that they lost that or they did something with it. That I can't get it out of my head. I even called them up and asked them. I said, I just want to see it. I want to make sure you have it. No, it's in the evidence. It's locked in and nobody can get in there. I said, I just want to see it to make sure you didn't lose it. It's hard for me to even know what they all took. I know they got her computer, her wallet. I know that. But what else? I don't. I have no idea. But there's pictures on there.
Pictures of her.
Of Ashley and other stuff. And I really wanted those pictures because the one detective told me, he's like, well, I'm going to make sure I get you a disc of that. I never got it.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that because I'm like, well, there's pictures of her and her brothers, you know, and yeah.
Sean, what do you make of this? I think Tammy understands that evidence is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to help the police department. You want to be able to give this evidence over because it could potentially get you closer to finding justice. But on the other side, Tammy's been here for over 10 years and hasn't gotten back an iPad, or I think at some point, Tammy, you even told me that you haven't even seen Ashley's driver's license, right?
Yeah, no, nope, it's in her wallet. Nope, I haven't got that back.
Well, let me say this, the computer and the iPad could certainly contain information that an investigator might find valuable. The ability to forensically examine electronics has come a long way. One of the questions I would have is, did they preserve with, for instance, let's say it was Facebook. Did they preserve with Facebook all the evidence that they had? Everything that was in her Facebook profile, even stuff that she deleted, did they preserve all that? Because if they did not preserve all that information, that may be problematic. I don't see anything wrong with them burning any photographs onto a disc so that the family can have them. There's no real issue in my mind in parsing that out, documenting this is what we had, make copies, photograph it, do whatever you need to do. But, you know, I don't see a problem with letting the family have back certain items. As long as they're items that would not be probative or important to your case.
Tammy, is there something that stands out through the years that you've given to the Milwaukee police that you haven't gotten back that you would really like to see back?
Oh, God. See, I don't even know what they all have. That's the thing. I don't know what was taken. They did, I have to say, they did give one thing back. It was a box that Ashley had with some stuff in it, with money, that contained money. They gave that back. That they did give back. But the pictures, that's, especially when they tell me, I'm going to burn a disc for you and give it to you, and then I get nothing.
I can understand there may be things on there that family doesn't need to see that may be important to the investigation. But simple photographs, those are memories.
Yeah,
those are visual memories that you should be able to get back and look at and hold on to. I would be having forensic experts look at her phone and computer again. Again, DNA. Is there any hair fiber evidence in this case? Is there any trace evidence at all in this case? Is there anything that could be resubmitted, re-examined to look at? Now, that's on the evidence side. Now, witness-wise, people that are related or friends with Ashley Love, should we be going back now and re-interviewing those people? Absolutely. We should go back and talk to every single one of them. Everybody.
Good luck with that, because some of them won't.
And why is that?
What I have found is that many times someone that is a witness in the beginning or a potential witness in the beginning, they may not want to get involved. They may be afraid to get involved. They may have skin in the game, so to speak. There can be a lot of reasons why somebody won't tell you everything. This is not a dig on anybody whatsoever, but the way that Kyle might ask questions is probably different from the way that Sean would ask questions. It would be different from the way Ed or Joe ask questions.
Right.
A lot of times, it's not always just the questions. A lot of times, Kyle, it's the person.
Interesting. Somebody they might feel more comfortable with.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times somebody that I work with sat down to conduct an interview and they just weren't getting anywhere and they realized, this person, we're just not clicking. Let me get somebody else in here. It's not a bad thing. It says nothing negative about the person that's doing the original interview. Maybe
sure.
This person is more comfortable talking to somebody else. So how about years later, maybe their thought process changed. Let's go back and talk to them again. Let's see if they're willing to talk to us now. Let me give y'all a little bit of Seanism here, okay? This is my theory after all these years of being on the job. I don't care who you are. I don't care how bad the thing is that you've done. With the exception of an extremely, extremely minute percentage of the population, you are going to tell somebody what you did. As an investigator, it is our job to get you to want to tell us. That applies to everybody, be it a witness, a potential witness, a suspect, anything. So, as I try to tell investigators, what we have to do is what? We have to sell ourselves. I have to get you to be willing to open up to me. If you fill this room up over here with 50 people, some victims, some witnesses, some suspects, and you said, interview all these people and find out everything they know, there are 50 different interviews right there. It's what do you require? I know what I want. I want the truth. I want facts. Yeah. I know what I want. But what's it going to take to get you to talk to me? I got to sell myself to you. Right?
Yeah.
I think in some ways you just validated the entire reason I'm doing this podcast. I personally believe that a fresh approach to this case is not a bad thing. I think that it could be super helpful and that more people may be willing to talk now. I also think that many people that we are going to talk to may have had a chance to kind of grow up since this has happened. You know, when Ashley was killed years ago, everybody was in high school or they had just graduated. So times have changed and people have grown up and matured.
Well, I think the way that we need to do this is talk about Ashley. Let's talk about who she was. You want people to understand who she was. Kyle, what I think needs to be done as well is there needs to be an email address. There needs to be a phone number that people can call and leave messages. We got to get people talking. It's been 10 years. What I used to hear was that people's memories fade. And I agree with that. But people that were not willing to talk then may be willing to talk now.
That's the key. I read that in a book about John Welsh. He said, the one person then, they asked him, why didn't you ever say anything? Because they said, I was never asked.
Yeah. I'll try to use this as an example. There's a homicide at this house on First Street. And one of the things that law enforcement does is they canvass that neighborhood. They walk up and down the street and they talk to everybody. One of the biggest mistakes that I've heard made is when you knock on the neighbor's door and you're talking to Noel and you ask Noel, did you see anything unusual yesterday? Well, you know what? They may not have seen anything unusual yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happened yesterday. Walk me through everything that occurred yesterday. You have to do canvas after canvas after canvas. You need to do 3, 4, whatever it takes. Because if I come today and I talk to Noel and I say, you know, walk me through yesterday. Tell me about what happened yesterday. She may tell me everything that happened. Now, if I come back to her tomorrow, she may have remembered something that she forgot to tell me.
But if you don't ask...
Yeah, right, because she's had all night to think about it. Now mm-hmm. she's like, And in this particular case, when the question was phrased properly, it was, well, you know, I did this, I was sat on the front porch, I remember Johnny riding by on his bicycle at such and such a time, you know, and all that was very important because it's not necessarily what's unusual, it's what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because it was not unusual for Johnny to be riding his bike. But nobody had mentioned that because it wasn't what? It wasn't unusual.
Sean, what would help you most in this case?
There are really two things that I prefer to look at to start with. And that is crime scene photographs. If they have crime scene video, I like to look at crime scene video, as well as medical examiner reports from the autopsy all the way through. Anything that they've got, those are the things I look at first.
That makes sense. And how important is it for you to have access to the case files, especially in a case like this?
Extremely, extremely important. As a cold case investigator, you want as much information as you can. Now I will tell you there are different approaches to working cold cases. I've talked to other cold case investigators, and we have differences of opinions in how to approach them. They're successful. I'm successful. Other people are successful, even if we have a little bit different methodology.
Do you think there's still a way that we can find justice without having the case files in this case?
That would be difficult. Yes and no. I mean, to have the case files would be obviously tremendous asset. I don't know if y'all have thought about like a FOIA request or anything like that.
What's a FOIA request?
Freedom of Information Act.
The Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA as it's known, is a federal freedom of information law that requires full or partial disclosure of previously unreleased information by the United States government upon request. It keeps citizens in the know about their government because the act was intended to make U.S. government agencies more transparent so the American public could more easily identify problems in the government functioning and therefore put pressure on Congress, agency officials, and even the president to address them. President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the FOIA Act into law in 1966. While the idea and the intentions behind a FOIA request sound great, it can be a bit tricky. Filing a FOIA request is a fine art, requiring you to be crystal clear with the request. FOIA requests are notoriously denied because of a failure to tick just one simple box or include a period of time somewhere in the document, which can be open to interpretation depending on who's reading the form. Further, FOIAs do not require any sort of agencies to do any sort of research for you, nor do they require any written answers or in any way to create records such as lists or statistics in order to be able to respond to a request. And of course, with anything, there's always a political angle. In May of 2016, then-Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark said that FOIAs are, quote, the lazy man's way of putting together newspaper columns using tax-paid government employees as pseudo-interns, unquote. He was also critical in saying that FOIA requests take time away from public service employees who provide crash reports and other vital information. The team at Love and Justice is dedicated to doing anything we can to find answers. Gaining access to case files under a FOIA request is our main priority here. We have made multiple requests and will give an update on our next episode about the status of these requests.
And I don't know if Kyle would want you to bring it up that, you know, you've got an investigator that specializes in death investigations and cold cases that's willing to look at the file, that's willing to sit down and go through it, is willing to try to help. And my thing, just so that everybody understands, in reviewing somebody else's work, is I'm not critical of what they did, because if you start criticizing for what they did, then that brick wall is going to go up. I'll do anything I can. I may not always have the right answer, but I do my best. We'll come up with a strategy here.
So I guess, Sean, my big question for you is, do you think that there's an actual chance that this case can be solved, even after all these years?
This case is solvable. Most cases are solvable. I believe this one is solvable. We just need the breaks. We need the right breaks. We need the right information. I don't care who you are. I don't care how bad the thing is that you've done, how heinous it is, how awful it is. You are going to tell somebody. At some point in your life, you're going to tell somebody. It's our job to get you to want to tell us. Do people fall apart? I don't know if they fall apart. I'm sure it eats at them. If they've got a conscience, if they've got a heart, if they have any feeling at all, it's going to get to them sooner or later. Interestingly enough, when you go to these people years later to talk to them, it's almost a relief for them to be able to finally talk about it.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. Well, we certainly have our work cut out for us, and I think our next episode is going to be all about Ashley's victimology.
Let me tell you, Sean, if you knew Ashley, she was such a good kid. She would do anything for anybody. God, it's for this to happen to her and for her brothers, I need this to be done for them. Because this wears on them day in and day out. They don't show it. They might not show it, but it's there. It takes something special to do what you do. I could never do it. And I know Ashley is not the only case, but she's my only case, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I keep calling.
And that's what people have to, from an investigative standpoint, that's kind of what they need to understand. We understand this is not the most important case you got, but it is my most important.
Exactly.
This was my daughter. This is my loved one. This is my flesh and blood. I do understand a lot of the frustrations that you go through. You can call me up anytime, yell, scream. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
All right. Appreciate that.
I'm pretty good for a sounding board.
I've never lost hope. I've been at the brink, but I've never lost hope that this is going to be solved. Well,
never give up.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all hang in there. Hopefully we'll get where we need to go.
Thank you. I had to take a deep breath, and I'm just like, part of me, all the emotions, like you said, are coming. Part of me is afraid. Part of me is mad as hell. Part of me wants to cry. Part of me, it's everything.
I won't lie to you. Sean has shed some tears with some people before. It just happens. I do have a heart. I do have feelings, contrary to popular belief.
Just looking at a picture of Ashley, and I'm like, yep, for you, Ashley. For you.
Do you have a tip? How about a question? Want to share some of your thoughts with our producers? Call our tip line, which is now live, at 323-591-9339. Love and Justice is an official podcast of Magic Lamp Productions and is recorded all over the United States of America. This episode was executive produced, directed, and hosted by me, Kyle Olson. Co-executive producer, Noel Kane. Segment producer, Jessica Solomon. Producer, Maddie Rose. Associate producer, Miranda Schmidt. Edited by Cody Crabb. Production assistant, Natalie Izquierdo. Very special thanks to Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex Love. Additional special thanks to Teresa Brockman, Terry Love, and Third Wheel Podcast Studio, Los Angeles. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and rate it 5 stars. Every single review greatly helps our exposure and increases the odds that more people will listen, which will help get this case solved. So please, rate this podcast and share it with your friends today. It only takes a quick minute. Somebody knows something. Maybe not everything, but something. Chances are that somebody is in Milwaukee right now. It could be you. There is a cash reward of $5,000 for information provided that leads to the conviction of Ashley Love's killer or killers. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.